Hello, and welcome back to The Lion's Share, a podcast series by the BBE Society at King's College London. I am your host, Dia Iyer, and this is the first of two episodes that will seek to untangle the ethical dilemmas of true crime. Today, we have with us guest speaker Theodore Radwani, a first-year PPE student at King's with research interests in political philosophy and global governance. Theodore will share his perspectives on the genre, its controversial portrayal, exposure, and everything true crime that exists between the cracks of documentary and sensational journalism. We're excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about true crime today. I think true crime is defined by a few elements, which kind of distinguishes it from other pieces of media that we regularly engage with. First, you kind of have the element of that it's not fictional. These are real stories that have happened to somebody in the past. As well, typically what's important is that there's a lot of unsolved elements to them. There's usually some sort of mystery. I mean, similarly to like other kind of criminal stories or detective stories, you read them because there's something unsolved about them, and that's why you engage with them, some aspect of mystery. Typically, also the way you engage with them is a little bit different than other pieces of media. It's not necessarily that you finish the story and that's it. Because there's something unsolved about it, that sticks with in your mind a little bit more. And I think that's kind of what led to the rise in popularity of something like true crime and makes it kind of interesting as a genre. Typically, you'll find it in podcast form, more recently TV series, things like that. I think that pretty much encompasses the, at least in my perspective, the important parts of true crime.
In the following segments of this episode, Theodore will untangle the ethical dilemmas of producing and consuming true crime and the various complexities associated with the genre.
I think the way that people engage with it is pretty interesting, just kind of empirically compared to a lot of other forms of media, and that, you know, once the storybook closes, the story isn't over. There's still more elements to be discovered and discussed. I think what's also kind of important in looking at true crime and how it impacts people is that it almost invites you in a certain way to help solve the mystery, to help look at the facts of what's been looked at. Because a lot of these stories, and well, not just stories, these are actual things that have happened. A lot of these events are taken from real cold cases that have been left by police because they can't solve it. And they're picked up by whoever's hosting the true crime piece of media, whether it's a podcast or a TV series, and they are somewhat fictionalized, their elements kind of expanded, and then the audience invited, once the media ends, to look into it themselves. In terms of how that impacts people, it has an interesting effect where it invites you to be a detective, and once you kind of look at being a detective for entertainment purposes, typically that's something that's reserved for people in career positions. You have to go through interview processes. Typically, you'll have to have a degree, sometimes in criminology, sometimes in an adjacent field. And once you begin investigating these things, it's a purely professional thing. There's no personal attachment to it. You're doing it because it's your job, and you have a duty to do that within your professional sphere. And by inviting amateurs as a part of that, you do get to engage in something interesting, which is foreign to you typically. I mean, as a kid, I read a few detective novels, and I liked it because there was the mystery part of it. There was always, you know, the unsolved mystery. You wanted to look into it because it invited you to do so. The media itself was not something which was, you know, in real life, when you look at a detective, that is a world foreign to you. There is a barrier between you and that job, being the interview process. But between the piece of media, that wall is much thinner because you're engaging with the media. It's fictionalized, at least in fictional detective stories. And by inviting people into doing that, I'm not too sure what the effect is, empirically speaking. I think, one, on the positive side, you could get a lot of people interested in true crime, and also, actually, in the sphere of criminology, going on to becoming detectives themselves. I think that could be a pretty positive impact. But also, as a part of that, in a negative sense, there's almost a strange perversion to it, because you're inviting people to solve crimes which the police have given up on. And typically, what that means is people have given up on that for a reason, that the case went cold, there's no evidence. And one, there's sort of a false hope that it could be solved by inviting the audience to do that, by kind of solving them, inviting them to solve an impossible puzzle in one sense, but also a lot of these puzzles through the collective actions of all the listeners, I mean, historically speaking, have been solved. And I think that's actually pretty amazing because we've gotten conclusive answers about cases that the police have dropped. In terms of inviting, you know, outsiders to look at these things, which are typically within the judicial and criminal sphere, you get a very strange kind of hybridization as a part of that. There's a reason we give this to the police typically, and that's because we don't want them to necessarily develop a personal attachment to them. It's their duty to do so. But when it's everybody else, it is kind of being sensationalized. And because of that, in a strange way, it becomes like a reality TV show. And once things are kind of like a reality TV show in terms of how you engage with them, they're looked at as entertainers, less so than real people. You know, like how you vote off people on Love Island, for example. Like, you don't look at them because that's necessarily a real person, but because it would be entertaining to do a certain thing. And I think that could be the negative aspect of it, sort of the depersonalization part of it.
When you spoke about how the audience is impacted and how people can build careers out of watching true crime stories, do you really think that most of the audience resonates with making a career out of true crime, or do you think that most of these people are ultimately those who turn into serial killers or have murderous intentions and motives?
I don't necessarily think so. I think most people, or at least the average Joe who engages with true crime, is somebody who's looking for entertainment, and they will engage with it for entertainment purposes only. I know that's why I listen to podcasts, and I've listened to a few true crime podcasts. Wasn't exactly my interest, so I didn't continue, but I still think people engage with it, particularly for the purposes of finding an entertaining and interesting story. In terms of how it might motivate people to become serial killers, I don't think there's necessarily any empirical evidence to suggest that, nor do I think that, at least how a lot of the media is structured, encourages people to become serial killers or develop harmful intentions. What I think it does encourage is a perversion of how people engage with media by encouraging them to take it into their own lives. And because of that, when you depersonalize the real events or kind of blur the boundary between reality and entertainment, what you then begin developing is sort of a everything is entertainment to me type of lifestyle, which is you don't engage with the media that you look at in a healthy way. I think people are able to solve the mysteries in fictionalized true crime books in a perfectly healthy sense because, one, they're fictionalized, and two, they're designed to be entertainment, and purely entertainment. When it comes to true crime, one, typically they're non-fictional. Sometimes there are fictionalized true crime stories, which I think are perfectly healthy to engage with. But when it's non-fictionalized and it's designed as entertainment, again, you're blurring the boundaries between what is necessarily real and in terms of how you engage with the media. I don't think it's necessarily healthy.
That's really interesting. Recently, there has been a show on Jeffrey Dahmer on Netflix, and it has gained a lot of popularity, especially consumers talking so much about the show. And interestingly, it's a very gruesome tale. So I was wondering if you could talk about the positive and negative impacts that the story has had on the audience, and how the audience responds to stories like these.
I think a lot of the psychological impact of that I've kind of touched on already, but I think in terms of what the production and release and success of Dahmer on Netflix kind of signals on a broader ethical sense is something which is broadly negative. I don't think that if you produce a piece of media based off of a true story, it's something categorically bad. I don't believe that. I think a lot of the times bringing attention to true stories about things that have happened in the past, using some fictionalized elements, can actually be good in certain cases. It can bring attention to, especially historical fiction, it can bring attention to places and things and historical events that people can broadly ignore, but also kind of bring forward uncomfortable realities about the world. But specifically with the treatment of Dahmer and, you know, its success, what that indicates to me, at least, is that the sensationalization of very gruesome real events is something which people will definitely eat up. They will watch it. A lot of me, or specifically me and a lot of my peer group, we look very negatively on that. We think that the impacts of Dahmer was very inappropriate in its production and also sensationalized murder and being a serial killer, which I think is kind of awful. Feel free to challenge me on that, but I think that a lot of people share that belief as well, that the sensationalization of murders and turning them into sort of a celebrity is, broadly speaking, a bad thing. And the impact of the movie, or not the movie, the TV series, in a lasting sense, will kind of lead to, I want to say, a lot of other media companies picking up real stories and turning them into sensationalized pieces of media, which I think is not necessarily a good thing, but also it can be used as a learning opportunity. I think there is a world in which the production of Dahmer and release of Dahmer could have been done in a broadly speaking positive and healthy fashion by showing it for what it is, which is the story of a serial killer. And I think in terms of how it was actually produced, was done for the sake of sensationalization, to get as many clicks as possible, to be viewed as many times as possible, and to be entertaining and retain watch time, which are metrics of success for media production companies nowadays. When you make a piece of true crime, what is really important about it is just that, one, it presents the facts and only the facts. Theory crafting is left to people who are experts on the subject and not to taking on people who are kind of average Joes as a part of it. I say this somewhat ironically as, you know, being a Joe Schmo talking about true crime now. But just making sure that it's more documentary styled. You can have pieces of true crime, which I think are very interesting and also just as compelling, without elements of sensationalization by purely sticking to the facts and presenting them in a documentary sense. And that way, one, there's still the mystery. People are allowed to engage with it, which I think is a really important and entertaining part of true crime, while also leaving out the elements of romanticization and sensationalization, which a series like Dahmer has done. I think in the future, a lot of media companies could learn from the criticisms of Dahmer to produce things which are, broadly speaking, not just more entertaining, but also more healthy to engage with. And also, I think, just better all around.
I think you've raised some really interesting points. I'd like to ask you to share your views on how not consumers, but the actors who take up these roles, these really challenging roles to play people like serial killers, people with murderous intent, say, for example, Joker or like Dahmer, as we have discussed. Actors really give in their 100% to embody or the character's persona. Do you think that actors really getting involved in their craft ultimately impacts them negatively?
I think it possibly could have. I'm not really an expert on method acting in that sense, but I mean, it's kind of been known a lot of actors will really get into character in order to embody their feelings, like Joaquin Phoenix and Joker. And I think this has kind of been well established in the past as a really effective method of acting as well, to really bring out the character, such as in The Shining as well. There's some pretty famous behind the scenes clips as well from The Shining specifically. And do I know if it'll have a negative impact on them as a person in the long term? Not necessarily. It could, but I think it's kind of just theory crafting at that point, whether or not it does have a negative impact on them. I think actors who do give it 100% should be lauded for that fact, because really playing a very psychologically damaged character is very challenging, and the actors who do successfully do so are definitely very much so, like I said, worth lauding for that fact. I think it's an amazing feat that they can accomplish like that.
When we talk about the ethicality of true crime, I know you shed a lot of light on your perspective on the ethicality of true crime, but how do you think people today can create this boundary between them just consuming true crime as a genre for entertainment and completely embodying the idea of true crime?
I think on that discussion, what needs to be said is that, one, a lot of the media we consume, broadly speaking, we want to impact us in some way. We want to leave it with something. I mean, a lot of movies and stories have morals, and that we want them to impact us in a certain way, and they can be disturbing pieces of media while still having an interesting commentary or just, you know, something intellectually challenging. I think pieces of media which fail to deliver on that can still be, broadly speaking, entertaining, but personally, I much prefer media which has some sort of challenge or message in it. That way you leave it having interpreted, having learned something. How this relates to true crime is that, one, you're challenged by true crime. You want to leave true crime with a mystery, and you want to think about it. You want to think, maybe so-and-so did it. Maybe they didn't consider this again. What if they looked back here? Those questions, in terms of how you think about true crime and solving mysteries, I think are okay. I think that's a perfectly fine way to engage with media, ethically speaking. Once those kind of engagements cross over into the impacting of other people is where you're sort of leaving the realm of ethical engagement with media. This question of true crime and how it impacts people is still an ethical question of how we engage with other people, because its impacts can be interpersonal. A lot of theory crafting and solving of unsolved true crime stories involve actually talking to people, witness accounts, gathering evidence. And a lot of people who are engaged with these stories have a lot of unanswered questions themselves, and often lasting scars if they were involved with these stories, either mental or physical. And the issue with that is that they might not necessarily want to bring these things up again. They might have put these things to peace, but say a media company picks up on a cold case and they want to publicize it and talk about it. It can be an interesting discussion, but it will dig up old scars and it will dig up unpleasant things for those people. And one, it's not necessarily just the media company. Two, it is the people themselves who are doing a lot of the harm. The media company itself will just kind of publicize these stories and take them. These are public information. A lot of these detective records are public record. You have access to them, and to monetize them and discuss them in an open forum, I think is people's right. It's not illegal, and I think generally speaking, to talk about it in an open forum is okay. But you need to also consider that the audience who is listening to them also wants to discuss these things. That's also okay in and of itself, generally speaking. The discussion of what media you engage with is pretty common. We have, you know, literary interpretation classes for that exact reason. The issue is that it's real people. Once you discuss these pieces of media, you might think, well, what if I want to go find this piece of evidence? What if I want to talk to this person? Those are real people. You can do that. You can still talk to those people, but they might not want to talk to you, and that's the issue. We, broadly speaking, have a responsibility to be nice to other people. I think that's pretty agreeable on a broad sense. And also that we want to respect their boundaries. I would like to have my boundaries respected, therefore I will respect theirs. This is sort of a Kantian perspective in that sense, but that's a bit more theory heavy. The issue is that once you kind of make the media a part of your lifestyle, that can affect other people. And we don't want to cross other people's boundaries with the media that we engage with. This is why fictionalized true crime can often be, broadly speaking, more healthy, because there's nobody's boundaries to cross. You just talk about the media, you discuss with other people, and that there's no real person whose discussion of this media is impacted by. There are victims, or there are family members of the victims of murders and true crime. There are people who have been horribly assaulted and have unspeakable things happen to them as a part of true crime. And they might not want to talk about these things. Even in the cases where these crimes have been solved by true crime, in terms of the ethicality of it, it might not be that they want these crimes solved. Sometimes solving a crime can bring up unpleasant truths about people. And because of that fact, it might exonerate others. It might incriminate others. That is not the duty of the average citizen to do. That is the duty of the police. If you want to cross into those realms of the police, you can sign up for them. You can join them. And even though it might be that an individual person, there could be cases where, you know, a victim of a crime which ended in a cold case and they desperately want it solved and it's solved by the public is a feel-good story. It's sensationalized. It's awesome because everybody wins there. And when everybody wins, boom, it's awesome. But that is not a generalizable case. There are a lot of people who want to leave these things as they are because it might dig up old scars, it might exonerate or criminate others. And we could have a duty to pursue the truth if you want to argue that case. But generally speaking, we also want to respect people along the way.
What do you think about these production houses profiting off these different stories? I know you have said a lot about how people engage with the idea of true crime and how we should set boundaries, but is it ethical for these production houses to actually profit off people's suffering in a sense?
I think that's one way of conceptualizing it, that they're profiting off of people's suffering, which is also a very compelling argument against true crime being picked up by production houses and sensationalized. Another sense is that these things are public record and that it is their duty to do whatever they want with them. It's okay from a legal perspective. I think the argument saying that they are profiting from people's suffering is more compelling because fundamentally that's what's going on. Somebody suffered, that was recorded, and the consequence of that is that a media company looks at that and says, we can make this into something that will entertain people. Because the goal of a production house is to make media which will make them as big a profit as possible. They are a firm in the end, and the objective of a firm is to create as much profit as possible. In terms of just the pure other perspectives of what it could mean to look at these pieces of media and to take them up, it's just that we need to look at these companies and say, is this something not just worth sensationalizing, but is it okay to sensationalize? I think historical fiction, for this reason, is something which is probably more permissible, because very likely there are fewer people alive to actually object to this. Movies like The 300, for example, this is about ancient Rome and ancient Greece as well, and what you have there is that none of these people are alive anymore. They left a historical record, and it can be sensationalized, because it won't necessarily hurt people. There are arguments and niche cases where it can, because obviously the culture of these places is still broadly alive, and also that they've been passed on. Every civilization contributes to the kind of progress of culture as a whole. But still, the further back you go, generally speaking, it's more okay to make stories about those things. It's okay to sensationalize and fictionalize them a little bit. But still, we should treat them with respect. We should be able to treat these historical records with respect, because these were real people. And we would argue that if they were still alive today, would they want this written about them? We should have empathy for the people we're writing the stories about, because what if it was us? And generally speaking, that level of empathy in terms of how we look at pieces of media and how we want to talk about them is important. When you watch a piece of media, you might identify with a character and you might say, wow, that character, they represent me. I look at them and I think they went through the same things that I did. And when you see that, we want that character to be treated with respect. That can apply to both fictional and true stories as well. The thing is with true stories is that just not just identifying with a character, but that is a real person. And when we say, wow, they represent me and my interests, we're also saying that's a real person who went through real events, and we would hope that they are treated with the same respect that somebody would treat us with. So when we're looking at fictionalizing and sensationalizing stories with true crime, it's really, really important just that we look at people and we think that is a real person. That is somebody like me who has their own interests, has their own life, and we want to make sure that we're not transgressing any of their boundaries. I'm kind of rehashing a lot of these same points because I really do think they're important and that there's a myriad of ways to arrive at these same conclusions. These are, broadly speaking, more desirable values in terms of the society we live in, which is that we want people to be respected, and we want ourselves to be respected. And we do that because we protect each other's interests. And media companies, broadly speaking, are doing this for their own interests and violating the interests of others. I think that's a pretty kind of neat way to wrap it up and look at what they are doing, just because I think it's pretty conclusively unethical, just to take a very specific stance on that. When you look at a movie, for example, made about the Bible, it can come off as pretty disrespectful if it's done very poorly, just because that's a holy text. That is something which is looked at and respected. But also, as we look at it, it wasn't just a holy text, but if we were to also interpret it as a historical text, there are real people in there. And we would hope that we don't disrespect those real people and what they did at some point and apply that to ourselves in our modern society. We don't want people to look at us and say we're objects to be profited off of. We don't want to be, you know, marketed. We want to be people. And generally speaking, it depersonalizes us when we are looked at as marketing materials, marketing objects, things to be sold, and our stories to be sold. A lot of our own stories are very sacred.
And that's it for this episode on The Lion's Share. A huge thank you to our guest speaker, Theodore Radwani, for his intriguing perspectives on true crime. We hope this episode has given you several things to think about. Special thanks to our PPE team and Serena Jalan from Berklee College of Music for the amazing background score. Remember to follow us on Instagram at KCLPPE for updates on our next episodes. My name is Dia Iyer and I've been your host. Thank you for joining us on The Lion's Share.